The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile. In the next hour, Dr. Pat showcases some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Get ready to live life full out. Here's your host, Dr. Pat Basile.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. We have got an incredible show for you today. Two of the most powerful spokespeople are joining us here to talk about what their passion is. First up is outstanding actress, author, and human potential spokesperson, Lindsay Wagner, followed by a topic that I'm very near and dear to, about how we can all honor people, all of us, regardless of what we've been classified in this world, whether it's dyslexia or ADD, ADHD. But let me start off by talking to you about something that's so important to me. Today is the launch of our incredible way to give for the sake of giving. For many of you, if you have not heard about it, this is an opportunity for you to receive and then pay it forward to somebody you know. Thousands of dollars worth of gifts and prizes is a campaign we put together. There is no selling. There is anything for you to do. However, we ask you to help us create a ripple effect of giving so you're going to be able to tell a friend. There's a special gift from me to all of you, and it's a movie I've created, a video, as most people in the modern day would say. So please today go to calltoconnection.com. Go to calltoconnection.com. And when you get there, take a look at what we're doing. Sign up and begin to enjoy the many gifts and tools that will help you change your lives. Today, I'm talking with Lindsay Wagner, and this is a person that knows a lot about human potential and changing lives. She has been heavily involved in human rights, domestic violence, animal welfare, and the environment, and for the public. Lindsay facilitates experiential, quiet the mind, and open the heart workshops and retreats to help overcome our own personal challenges while accessing the peace and joy that is naturally within us. And so she'll also mention the upcoming event, November 12th through the 14th. Please make sure you take a look at what that is. There is a special invitation and discount. But I want to introduce you all to my very special guest, this incredible actor, amazing spokesperson, Lindsay Wagner. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. What a great, great opportunity for us to connect and connect in a huge way. Lindsay Wagner is joining me here today. For those of you that just heard me do my formal introduction of who she is, one of the things you may not know is what her life's journey has taken her to and what she is planning. We would love to introduce all of you right now to the Oneness Intensive. Lindsay, thank you for joining me here today. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show.
Hey, thank you. Thank you very much.
Let me ask you a simple question, and yet it may be a little bit complicated. The need for or the call for a Oneness Intensive in this day and age right now is so important for some people. But why has this really struck a chord with you? How has your life journey brought you to this very moment?
You're right. It's a big question sounding like a little
one.
They
didn't tell you about me, did they?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, in brief, because I know we don't have a lot of time, I think more about my story can be seen in my bio and whatnot. But in essence, I've been the integration of body, mind, and spirit for having a wonderful, healthy, happy life. On all those levels and feeling spiritually connected has always been profoundly important to me and has really been my life's passion, if you will. Even though people may think acting was my passion, that was my passion, and I found that the acting world, that, and having been so successful in it, gave me the opportunity, gave me a venue to share things with people, lots of people. And so through my work, I would do that, but since I was 19, I've been studying this and going through my own personal journey. So even before acting, it was, that's what my life was devoted to. So in the last 10 years, my focus of what I do out in the world has shifted a lot. And I've worked in jails with domestic violence offenders, sharing techniques and working with a co-facilitator there to help people learn how to kind of get out of these syndromes that we get trapped in. And started my work with groups started like that, and then it evolved eventually into doing groups for the public. And now I have, if people want to go to lindsaywagnerinternational.com, you can read about the workshops that I do, and I've been doing that for about 6 years out in the public. So it's just been a whole evolution through my life that some people may have known and other people didn't. And the oneness, Diksha, or the oneness in the West, sometimes they call it the oneness blessing, is a particular technique which is being shared and taught, and facilitators being and the ability to become a facilitator is what's going on this coming weekend in this particular technique, which I utilize as one of the primary techniques that I use and teach in my workshops. And it is really about an energy. It's a flow of an energy, learning to be able to bring this flow more deeply into your experience and bring it through to others. And it shifts the calibration, of the various chakras or the energy centers in your body. And that brings about a shift on a physiological and a neurological level. It's a particular frequency, like love is a frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And hate energy is a frequency. It's an energy. Everything is energy. So, to experience and ground ourselves in our highest frequency so that we can live there more, as opposed to knowing they exist. Yeah, I felt it a couple times. Where did that go, and why can't I stay there? A lot of that has to do with our energy field being stuck in a pattern that doesn't serve us staying there. And I have found this to be one of the most powerful techniques to help what I call, for me, bring up my bottom line. Mm. We're all going to keep feeling things and maybe, getting hurt, but for that to come up, be a wave, and satiate and be gone, as opposed to living with it, is what I call suffering, as opposed to there's pain and then there's suffering. And the suffering is kind of this ongoing thing that we're trapped in, as opposed to just pain comes up, it moves through, it goes away, and I'm back to my higher self again. But we get trapped in it. And I found this technique to be extraordinarily helpful in that journey of just being able to let things go, or not even be triggered anymore by a lot of things without great effort, because we've had a shift in the energy field. Mm. Therefore, our cognizant mind ends up seeing things differently, responding to things differently. It's such a relief to know that there's techniques coming up today, and obviously at this point in history, we need techniques that work quickly and simply. We don't have time to sit anymore on a therapy couch for 25 years.
I know, we've done that, haven't we?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not putting it down. It's got value, sure. But we need some assist on a level that can put some more wind beneath our wings as far as moving forward and awakening to releasing our, the negative emotions that we get trapped with. And our relationships start improving without effort. That's the thing I love about this. That's what got struck my eye, is that it goes straight to the energy field.
Mm-hmm. And, this is one of the largest intensives, one of the biggest gatherings in North America. And, the thing that I love about this is certainly you and I as individuals, we can certainly do something to shift, raise the vibration, change the energy. But to gather, as they say, when two or more people are gathered, to gather this many people, it certainly does raise the energy and the ripple effect. What is your vision for this event you know, beyond having amazing featured speakers here, and how people can become a blessing giver, what is the vision that you had in looking at this and, you know, the direction that you would like this energy to go?
Well, I thought, well, they're really one and the same. I guess I don't need to even qualify that. And that is that as many people as have the opportunity can experience it when you're in a group, as you just said, one's own experience is going to be exponentially stronger, and again, putting even more wind beneath our wings. And when it's going in a positive direction, that's really cool because the same thing can happen in a negative direction. You know, they talk about crowd frenzy. Somebody gets upset and somebody goes, yeah, me too, yeah, me too. And all of a sudden, the potency of that whole group being angry or hateful, you know, just intensifies your own experience of that. Well, in this case, it makes it easier for us to experience that connectedness, that oneness. Connectedness is one of the a sense of connectedness, that which we feel so separate so much of the time, even though intellectually, I know I'm connected to my family, of course, but do you feel that? You know, that's what's going to change us when we start really being able to feel it. So for us to have those types of feelings on a day-to-day level, we're going to put out a different energy, and we're going to stimulate different things in other people without trying to do anything. It's just because we're giving off a different energy. And that fans that potential in that other person, whether it's somebody you're paying money to at a gas station to buy gas or whether it's talking with your child. We're going to create a different response in the world with what we put out. So I see the opportunity here to have, for every person that goes there, to affect hundreds, if not thousands, of people constantly, because it's a ripple that does then go out. If that person just being around you felt better, they're going to do that to the next person. You have no idea how you affect so many people. We feel so small and so insignificant sometimes. What can I do to help the world? What can you do? You are amazing. You are the catalyst to being able to shift someone else. And it's not about preaching to them or making them be different. It's about you carrying that oneness, that love, that unconditional love, meaning you, I require nothing, no specific conditions for me to love you, even if your behavior is horrific right now. I don't have to stop loving you. It's just that I get into my own issues, my own problems. I get triggered, therefore I close off, and now I have to end up forgiving you. You know, so to me, that cycle really is, that's how oftentimes unconditional love is defined. But the power of unconditional love, which is talked about in every spiritual tradition or religious tradition, and even people who are not religious can say, well, yeah, love is a very, or not spiritual at all, believe that love is important and it's healing and whatnot. So to be able to maintain that sense, that feeling, that grounding there when someone else is acting out is going to help that person heal whatever wound is demonstrating in that behavior. But we have those same things, those triggers too, so that's why I love this particular thing, and I just feel it has the potential to go out and shift humanity in a big way.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I'm actually so excited to be talking with you about, because I do know of your work. I do know what, you know, your soul's path has been about based on what you're teaching and what you're paying forward to other people. And I wanted to ask you this question. I mean, this intensive, this gathering, this blessing, this new way of creating ease and grace and inner peace is so important right now for people in the world. And I wanted to ask you if you had given some thought to how we, all of us, can reach out to some people that are down a cord. I don't know about you, but I've been at some tough places in my life, including being homeless. And so I remember the people that have lifted and given me a hand. So my question is, how do you see all of us, including this weekend, this intensive, being the portal for that?
Well, for me, everything I teach in my workshops and the way I choose to live my life and relate to myself is to keep bringing it home, is to look at myself. I naturally, when I'm in that state and if I'm with someone, when I'm grounded in my higher self and not trapped in a sense of separateness or kind of semi fearful vigilance because I'm out in the street or out in the world or whatever, and so I see people in that state of mistrust, you know, I don't trust you until you prove yourself trustworthy instead of the other way around, you know, that place we get trapped in. The more work we do with ourselves, the more every day and every moment something intuitive and inspired will come from us. So when we're around somebody who may need something. But if I'm trapped and I'm thinking about, you know, what I don't have or the fear of some relationship, losing some relationship or whatever, that occupies my mind, and I'm walking down the street and I see someone who may need help. I don't see them because I don't see even where I am. I'm trapped in that state, although my body's moving me from here to my car. So there's a spontaneous way, and of course then one could be motivated on a deeper and grander level to start some kind of an organization or a specific type of outreach. But and I see it being able to happen in all those ways. But first, look at, and if you don't feel that, just look at what you do feel. I think we have to reach out to ourselves times, as opposed to indulge the fears that we live with, looking at them, observing them, being with them, allowing ourselves to let ourselves feel them and utilize techniques, which I have my set of techniques that I think are brilliant and have helped me so profoundly, which is why I teach them. And other people may have others. But the truth is, you know, it's hard to really honestly give something to someone that's really meaningful if you're doing it because you think you should. And if you're not feeling it, then you need the outreach. And with great compassion, not with judgment. Don't be judgmental with yourself. I don't know if that's what you wanted to hear, but
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And Lindsay, thank you so much. I know you have to run. I probably could have talked to you for an entire hour, but I know you're very busy.
Thank you.
This is
great. And so the event, I guess you have the information.
Absolutely. And we'll make sure everyone has the event. We're actually going to be announcing it on multiple networks. And so I so appreciate you joining us here today. For those of you out there, we're talking about the Oneness Intensive Los Angeles, November 12th through the 14th. Lindsay Wagner will be there, and
I'm actually not going to be able to physically be there because I have an event in Texas, but I'm going to join on Skype. I just didn't want people to be
exactly.
I'm
Thank you.
That's in Skype, yeah.
Oh, we love Skype, don't we? It's amazing.
I'm just learning. And if you do register for it, I'd love to know who you are, who came through the interview. So if you could put my name or my link or something, I think you have my link, you can put that on the website. But if somebody's just hearing this and you end up going, just write my name as the reference, and so I'll get to know who came as a result of the radio shows. We like to know where you came from.
Absolutely, and we'll make sure we give this where this is actually going to be broadcast on multiple networks, including some of our CBS affiliates. So thank you, Lindsay, so much for joining us today.
Thanks.
All right, everyone, we'll be right back.
Talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Are you tired of hanging on to things in your life that hold you back? Get ready to reclaim your fearless nature with Annette Bingham. Annette has been a catalyst for helping people achieve maximum results. Known for her breakthrough approaches, she will assist you to unleash your true power. Her unique distance healing techniques have been empowering people globally. Get ready for a life-changing event to step into your fearless nature. For more information, visit AnnetteBingham.com or call 432-770-4062.
Now is the perfect time to learn Tai Chi and Qigong. These ancient Chinese healing arts, also called mind-body practice, are simple to learn, clinically proven to be effective, and can be practiced by anyone, anywhere, at any time. For 10 years, the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi has been a respected leader in mind-body practice training. visit IIQTC.org. Empower yourself, empower others. Visit IIQTC.org for more information on Mind Body Practice. IIQTC.org. How would you like increased health and vitality? Would you like relief from acute or chronic health issues? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? Would you like relief from allergy, weight, and digestive issues? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural technique. Whether you seek relief from health issues or desire to live at your optimum health and vitality, contact reflex analysis is a profound method which detects imbalances at a subclinical level, restoring health issues before they arise while increasing vitality and longevity. Discover CRA.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Every day we're moving toward wellness or away from wellness. I'd like to be your partner in achieving your optimal health and well-being. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
Hi, I'm Don Brecky. I chose 2 years ago to get on the Take Shape for Life program. I've lost 30 pounds and kept it off over 2 years. I have more energy. I get out of bed without backaches. It's been a life changer.
Hi, I'm Dale Gardner. With the Take Shape for Life program, me and my wife lost 90 pounds together, and that was 2 years ago, and we feel great.
Get healthy with the Take Shape for Life program. Get clinically tested products from Medifast and support from a free certified health coach. Visit simpletolose.com to learn more. Results will vary. Consult a physician before beginning weight loss program. Call or go online for complete program and discount details.
Today's tip is brought to you by David Emerald, author of The Power of TED. Call a timeout every now and then. Set your watch to remind yourself every 2 hours to take a look at your intentions and actions. Have you been focusing on reacting to problems or creating outcomes? Have you been responding from the victim role of the drama triangle or the creator role of the empowerment dynamic? Take time out to review your intentions and choices, making sure that you are indeed focused on creating the outcomes you want in your life. That is the way of a creator. Here's to the creator in you.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile. If you have a question or comment, call us toll free at 866-472-5788. Now back to the program. Here's Dr. Pat Basile.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. Wow, as I said before, please join our Pay It Forward Angel community and go to calltoconnection.com. I want to talk about something that is so important to me, and I am honored to have Dr. Howard Levinson joining us here today. He has a book out, and more importantly, he's on a mission. The book is called Smart, But Feeling Dumb, Now a New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia, ADD, ADHD, and all of the D's pretty much. I'm honored to have him here. But this is a conversation about the link between the victims and the bullies and its cure. Dr. Howard Levinson is joining us here today. I could go on and on about who he is, but I want to give you an introduction. He is a world-renowned psychiatrist and neurologist. His 35-year research effort, now considered decades ahead of its time, light years, if I could tell you, ahead of its time, is credited with bringing about a dramatic medical breakthrough in the understanding, diagnosis, and successful treatment of dyslexia and related inner ear determined learning, attention deficit, and much more. And so Dr. Levinson has incredible insights into this. He has published everywhere. He has been on Larry King. He's been on Today. But today he's joining us because, as some people say, the cat is out of the box. And we're going to tell you exactly what that means. Dr. Levinson, it is such an honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show.
Well, thank you for giving me a forum with which to try and help countless millions.
Let's explain, and let me just call it the syndromes for a moment. Let's give people an idea of what we're talking about and what possessed you, really, to study this.
Well, basically, what possessed me to study it is I needed a job when I finished my residency some 45 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. And oh, isn't that the truth,
the
though?
The Board of Education was looking for a psychiatrist who was determined enough to be able to help learning disabled, reading disabled children. And it was thought at that time to be a psychological problem. And after examining probably 1,000 patients for the Board of Education, most of them being reading disabled, the majority also having difficulty with concentration, it turned out that the psychological factors were secondary to something that was yet undiscovered. In other words, many of the kids had phobias. Some were school phobic. Some of them bit their nails. They had tics. They had psychosomatic-like symptoms, headaches, dizziness, motion sickness. They worried a lot. They had nausea and dizziness and God knows how many other symptoms, including bedwetting and soiling. And the neurological theory at the time was that if it wasn't psychological, there had to be something wrong with the thinking brain, that it was a reading processor within the thinking brain that couldn't read the clear signals it received. And that made perfect sense, since adults who lost the ability to read had a proven impairment in the reading processor. It's within the left thinking brain. Mm. Anyway, I examined 1,000 cases looking for this particular problem. Nobody else could find it. I was determined. I was young and, quote, naive, and I thought I could find what everybody else didn't simply by examining and re-examining the patients. And I couldn't find it either. But when I re-examined 1,000 cases, I found that what characterized the vast majority of the children were they had drunken driving signs. And they couldn't walk a straight line. They couldn't balance on one foot. They couldn't touch their nose with their finger with their eyes closed. They had difficulty walking heel to toe, difficulty alternating their arms, and difficulty touching their thumb and fingers in sequence with their eyes closed or upon distraction, and on it went. The typical drunken driving signs. And what permeated all the documents that the clinical team found, where they were late talkers, late crawlers, late walkers, they had trouble with eye-hand coordination for catching, throwing, batting, they were accident-prone, they had trouble hopping and skipping, they had some difficulty with fine, gross, or rhythmic coordination of whatever type. These were the prevailing signs. Everybody else found them, but said they were unimportant because they didn't point to anything where they were looking for, namely a processor impairment within the thinking brain. I, at one point, said, well, if these are the only signs found, maybe they are the only signs that exist. And what do all these signs point to? And I said they point to a problem within the inner ear and its supercomputer, the cerebellum, the lower brain of man. And then I have to say, well, how could an input problem, how could a problem that had to do with balance, coordination, rhythm on the output, how could it impair reading processors and writing processors and spelling processors? And how could the IQ be normal and superior and gifted even? Well, I came up with a very, very simple solution. I merely reversed what everybody else had thought. I said the processes within the thinking brain had to be normal, or Einstein, Edison, Da Vinci, Patton, and God knows how many gifted people with dyslexia and ADD there are. So there couldn't be too much wrong with their thinking brains. Maybe the signals were scrambled. And as a result, scrambled signals, like the fine tuner on a TV set sending scrambled signals visually and acoustically to channel 1, 3, 5, 7. Depending on the channels receiving these scrambled signals, that would determine the varied symptoms people had. And the severity of the symptoms would depend just on the degree of scrambling plus the ability of the thinking brain to descramble the images coming in blurry and doubled up and wiggled and whatnot, similar to whatever people see and listen to on a drifting television set with a sound and or the visual perception is all messed up. And that made all the difference in the world because we suddenly had an explanation that could account for why individuals could be gifted and have so many different symptoms. If the process, if the thinking brain processing theory were correct, you'd have to have a minus 1,000 IQ for the reading process to be impaired, the writing and the spelling, and I'll go into all the symptoms that characterize not only dyslexia, which is just a reading problem, so-called, but it really is a syndrome, and very few people merely have a reading problem with dyslexia, and I'll go into that. So we suddenly had a very simple explanation that accounted for everything, including the IQ, including a favorable outcome or a favorable prognosis. Everybody knows that if the processor is impaired, you can send signals, practicing signals, over and over again. It's not going to do anything if the processor is impaired. But if the signal is impaired, the processors can adapt if they're healthy, and these scramble signals that are not quite right.
Well, one of the things that, you know, you also talk about, and this is so important, you know, to bring up, I mean, now you have the discovery, and now you're ready to help so many adults and children, because children grow up to be adults. And so, you know, having that you've discovered this, and you also talk about overlapping symptoms. What is the relationship between these symptoms and bullying?
Well, first let me go into the symptoms a little more.
Okay.
And the treatment, if you don't mind.
Yes, please.
And then we'll get into bullying. Because like all discoveries, many of them occur by accident or unexpectedly. And then if you're lucky enough, you can recognize connections. Basically, once I recognized that there was an inner ear problem responsible for all the symptoms characterizing not only dyslexia but ADHD, I said to myself, well, let me start treating these individuals with inner ear improving medications like the motion sickness medications, their antihistamines. And lo and behold, I found that not only did the dizziness and the balance and the coordination improve, but reading and writing and spelling and math and memory, sense of direction and time improved, grammatical details were suddenly understood, and concentration became significantly better. They were no longer distracted. Their impulsivity was controlled. They were no longer acting out aggressively, verbally, and whatnot. They were not overactive and driven. They weren't frustrated easily and prone to temper tantrums. And many of them started to feel better. And some would say, you know, I suddenly feel like I have a brain. I'm not fogged out. I don't feel dumb. For years, these individuals obviously thought they were brainless or dumb and whatnot. So their self-esteem improved. Now, recognizing all of this, it became clear that dyslexia was not just a reading problem, and ADD is not just a concentration problem. These are all merely symptoms of an inner ear syndrome that now can be successfully treated with inner ear improving medications that lessen the degree of scrambling of the signals coming in and improve the ability of the brain to focus on these scrambled signals and thus enable them to de-scramble them. Now, as a byproduct of this, I suddenly discovered that that a whole slew of phobias disappeared. And I then recognized that phobias, fears of heights, have to do with balance. Agoraphobia, walking in wide open spaces, has to do with perception and coordination or balance. And there's a phobia for every form of motion sickness, moving elevators, escalators, trains, planes, buses. So a whole slew of mood and anxiety disorders disappeared. In addition, I suddenly recognized that children who had a tendency to bully stopped bullying. And children who were victims of these bullies suddenly no longer were ready to be victimized. And I suddenly recognized that not necessarily for all bullied individuals and bullying individuals, but a significant factor or sector of them had an inner ear connection. In other words, if inner ear improving medication could eliminate a symptom, then obviously the symptom had to have an inner ear determinant. If we looked into it and proved it. Indeed, it turned out that the reason a lot of bullies were bullying others is they felt dumb and stupid and frustrated and angry. And the ones that became bullies tended to be bigger and stronger, more impulsive, more aggressive. And the ones that were bullied tend to be more passive, weaker, unable to defend themselves either verbally or socially. They were socially dyslexic, many of them. Some of them are called Asperger, but really they couldn't read other people's expressions. They didn't know how to defend themselves or back off or avoid individuals that looked aggressive to them. They didn't know how to handle the situation, and so that many of them were stuck in it, and others smelled blood and attacked them because they had to discharge their aggression and their frustration against someone, and obviously the weaker ones were the ones that would take it. And the weaker ones also felt guilty and frustrated, and some of them felt deserving of abuse. And so many of them took the abuse without complaining too much.
Yeah.
So I suddenly found an underpinning.
This is, can I just say this? For me, I'm listening to you, and I am so thrilled you discovered this. But there is a real sadness to this story, if I might say. I mean, I think what you've discovered is breakthrough beyond breakthrough. But what you're describing has certainly not made ADD, ADHD, or dyslexia a gift, as people would call it. Wouldn't you say, Dr. Levinson?
Well, I think it's the most nonsensical thing one could imagine, but it has to do with ignorance. It has to do with rationalization.
Yeah.
If you don't understand something and you're well-meaning, you say, okay, it's a gift because some individuals are gifted with dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
But many individuals, the majority, are not gifted with dyslexia or ADD. They're severely handicapped by it. And many, for every gifted dyslexic or ADD individuals, there are 1,000 that aren't and fail and fall by the wayside. Many of them not only drift into bullying and the bullied, but they drift into dropping out of school, drugs, crime. They drift into difficulty with working and holding a job and holding a marriage and raising children. And so there are many also psychological ramifications to this problem, where the abuse that these individuals have felt all along, many of them were abused by teachers unwittingly, by other students who made fun of them because they were so-called stupid. Many of them just made fun of themselves, even if others didn't bother them. They just felt annoyed with themselves, very frustrated and brainless. And so they felt deserving of criticism, deserving of abuse. And they ostracized themselves. They made themselves into targets unwittingly. And as a result, when they grew up, many of them raised families abusing them or teaching them to be passively abusive. So that, again, a physiological predisposition led to psychological ramifications in a vicious cycle. And it fed generation upon generation who didn't really understand the underpin of this problem. So it wasn't a gift. It was a devastating problem that fortunately now could be understood, and just explaining it to individuals goes a long way. In other words, many behavioral therapists look at the surface symptoms and say, okay, you're being abusive and you're being abused and you shouldn't do this and you should talk about it. You know, all these things are great, and I certainly have nothing against them. And being a psychiatrist, I was trained to do all these things. But in understanding the underpin to this, another hidden dimension, we can now treat the cause as well as the symptom from both ends and get much, much better results. And a clearer understanding goes a long way to everybody involved with this process, from the reading disorder to the writing to the spelling to the concentration to the behavior disorder to the bullied and on to the phobic. and even the mood disordered, because if you're feeling this way, you're going to be depressed. So it's no wonder that when people explain bullying, they said it affects cognition, it affects emotions, it affects school. Of course it does. But it also is caused by all these problems as a result of a neurophysiological problem that I've just discovered and described to you. So that the nice thing about it is that once we have understood clearly that part of the syndrome that's caused by an inner ear problem, we can then, and also we can then look into and see what are the psychological aspects of this. What other biological determinants could explain bullying and bully? And again, everybody tends to restrict these definitions, not seeing the large picture. Sometimes the larger picture helps in understanding the smaller picture, and vice versa. But bullying occurs not only in children and adolescents, it's in your job. It's in an adult phenomena as well. It occurs politically among parties. It occurs among nations that go to war, with the stronger one bullying or dominating weaker ones. And if the weaker ones submit, the bully takes over more and more. He doesn't stop, or it, as a general rule, doesn't stop. So one has to recognize, although statistics state that 50% of patients are bullied, or 50% of people are bullied, or 30% are bullied, and that bullying tends to be more physical in males and more verbal in females. Mm-hmm. Although all of these are very, very important, what is overlooked is there has to be universal underpins in order to determine the large number of bullying phenomena, whether it be mild or severe, whether it be in young individuals, in older individuals, or even among nations. When you see it as a national phenomenon or a worldwide phenomenon, you begin to wonder if there isn't universal phenomena underlying it, namely genetic problems or physiological problems. Bias, for example, results in bullying. Anybody weaker, whether they're homosexual or whatever, is bullied because there's somebody needing strength, need to prove they're stronger or better, by attacking somebody weaker. And so even, you know, it says that bullied individuals tend to be, by and large, from minority groups of various types,
mm-hmm.
Minority religious groups and whatnot. That's only because the majority can always attack a minority. But on an individual basis, a minority individual might be stronger. So they're not going to be bullied by an individual. They'll be bullied by a group. But you have these bias phenomena that underlie bullying. And I live off a lake. And
uh-huh.
I initially, and I learned a lot. I initially grew up in Brooklyn. There weren't too many trees and not too many
ducks. Oh, no,
ducks.
I grew up in the Bronx, so I totally understand that.
And there were not too many ducks. But looking at a lake, it's very, very interesting. I was one day looking at the lake, and it was frozen, and you had white geese and dark birds. And it's very interesting. They never mixed. They never intermingled.
Huh.
Whenever they moved as a group, but they never socialized or intermingled, so to speak. And then I said, you know, bias must have a biological root because it's so universal. It's so common. And it's almost eradicable. You can't get rid of it. It's like a dike. You plug one part of it, and water runs out another, and it keeps coming back. And so the same is true with bullying. And then I recognized that the aggressive drives and the sexual drives in individuals are different. Some are stronger than others. Some are born more passive-aggressive. Some are born more overt aggressive. And so in order for an individual to get satisfaction out of hurting other people, somehow there has to be a contamination or a merging of the sexual and aggressive drives. You can explain the aggressive drive, for example, every animal has it. To survive, the stronger has to, so to speak, attack and take over the weaker. So we see a biological phenomena there. They don't necessarily enjoy it, an animal. They need it to survive. But in humans, I suspect that the sexual drive or the pleasurable drive gets mixed in with this aggressive drive, and under certain circumstances, they're not controlled properly. And out pops these impulses that result in bullying of various degrees and severities. And it could thus account for why bullying can occur so universally and in so many varied forms, and why it can attack children or affect children as well as adolescents, as well as adults, as well as nations as a whole, and why it's even characteristic in our animal species.
Well, I want to ask you a question because this is, you know, for many people listening to this for the first time, well, first of all, let me tell you, I'm so thrilled Dr. Howard Levinson joining us here today. He's got an incredible book out, revised and updated, Smart But Feeling Dumb, New Understanding and Dramatic Treatment for Dyslexia, LD and ADD. I wanted to get to this place now because this is an incredible breakthrough. But what it does is it really opens the door up for people that really have felt hopeless in this situation. Like, wow, this is something I have, so I need to go get Ritalin or something else that I have to take, right? And this is the way I'm going to be for the rest of our lives. How have you been able to shift that paradigm for people?
Well, by giving them an understanding they've never been given before. And understanding provides alternatives because it gives you more depth. For example, many individuals are biased against stimulants. And what they then say is stimulants can lead to addiction, stimulants can lead to heart attacks, and on it goes.
Mm-hmm.
However, it's not the stimulants that are the problem, or it's not often the medications that's the problem. It's the way it's handled, the way it's described, the way it's followed and monitored. It's like a car. You can get into an accident with a Rolls Royce and blame the car. You can get into an accident with a Volkswagen and blame the car. Most of the time, it's the driver. So that if you recognize and understand the pluses and minuses of medications, you can reduce the risk of any medication to almost nothing. That's number one. Number two, very few people who dramatize the negatives of medication also dramatize what happens if these individuals are not helped with medication. For example, we can take a simple like a strep throat. Penicillin is known to produce all sorts of allergic reactions.
Yeah.
But what can happen if you don't treat a strep throat with penicillin? You can get heart problems and brain problems and God knows what. So if you control and minimize the risk of antibiotics to close to zero, you have saved a large number of individuals from a fate close to death. The same is true with vaccinations. You hear about all the possible autistic phenomena that vaccinations can do, none of which, in my opinion, has yet been proven. But even if vaccinations did have a certain incidence of side effects, it's eliminated polio, smallpox, chickenpox, with encephalitis and all sorts of disasters that people in prior generations suffered. So whenever you speak about a medication, whatever the name is, you have to look at the pros and cons of the medication, as well as the benefits and what happens if you don't treat these individuals. What are the risks of non-treatment with effective medications? That's number one. Number two, by recognizing that reading and writing and spelling and math and all these disorders are due to an inner ear problem, many of which respond to inner ear antihistamines, it means that the need for stimulants is reduced, not necessarily eliminated,
uh-huh.
and or the dose of the stimulants needed to maximize the improvement or complement the improvement of the antihistamines, the doses are smaller. So that what you do is you get better results with smaller doses and absolutely eliminate the possibility of any significant side effects. For example, I start every patient of mine with tiny doses of medication, far below what people recommend, irregardless of what the name of the medication is, simply because I'm not dealing with emergency situations. So what I do is I test dose everybody, make sure there's no side effects, and then I slowly increase the dose. If I reach a point where there's a side effect, I stop, go back, and eliminate that side effect. So that basically, in treating individuals that are called dyslexic, ADD, dysgraphic, dysphasic, all the D's and the rest of the alphabet, I can go into an
Asperger begins with an A. I've been there.
Just to give you an idea, you have an alphabet of disorders, including developmental delays and minimal brain damage and minimal cerebral damage. I can the list of synonyms is probably 30 to 40 because everybody who didn't understand something labeled it by a different name and took credit for understanding something they didn't by giving it a special label. But anyway, there's a whole slew of disorders that boil down to one common denominator, including dizziness and motion sickness, klutziness, it's called dyspraxia, dysgraphia, poor writing coordination, poor speech coordination, stuttering and stammering.
Now, oh, my gosh. I have to bring you back.
What happens
I hope, Dr. Levinson, you will come back. This is a very this is so interesting and explains so much to me. And I'm going to end this by just sharing this with you and thanking you for joining me here today. You pretty much described my childhood. Earaches early on, stuttered as a teenager. All of the things you've talked about, I'm sure many people have experienced. Dr. Harold Levinson, everyone, we're going to be bringing him back. You know why? We haven't even scratched the surface with this. So remember, everyone, go to calltoconnection.com, join our giving community, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to The Dr. Pat Show, radio to thrive by. To contact Dr. Pat, visit thedrpatshow.com. Tune in next Thursday for another dynamic hour of The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile.